sterile processing, it's such a vital function to patient care and safety. But from what I hear, the vast majority of healthcare leaders just don't understand its value. And therefore, they don't want to invest in its people, processes, or technology.
Beyond Clean offers a creative look into the inner workings of a healthcare industry committed to getting it right. Every instrument, every time. Join us every week as we explore the hidden world of one of the most important aspects of safe surgical care. And now your hosts, Michael Matthews, Hank Balch, and Justin Poulin.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Kara Netto, founder of KLN Communications Incorporated. She established the company in 2005 to offer healthcare companies and organizations strategic, results-oriented communications support that is delivered with integrity, reliability, and efficiency. She has nearly 20 years of experience as a healthcare writer, having served medtech and pharmaceutical manufacturers, healthcare industry software solution and service providers, and industry associations. Since 2013, she has served as the features editor for Healthcare Purchasing News magazine, covering topics related to the operating room and central sterile processing departments. This periodical is one that I think everybody out there subscribes to, and if you don't, you definitely should. They've taken a great interest in sterile processing. I've actually contributed to a number of articles, as has Hank. And now today we're going to talk about their annual survey for sterile processing professionals' salaries, which is a hot topic in the industry, Hank, and I'm excited to go over some of the details as well as general insights from Kara's career.
The survey, obviously, huge topic every year when it comes out, and it's a huge topic every day in the life of frontline technicians. I'm excited to get into that, as you mentioned, in the second segment, to also get to some tips and perspectives on how, if you're interested in getting into healthcare writing and in particular sterile processing content creation, how to do that or get these insights from a true expert. Super excited that Kara agreed to come on the show with us, and I'm looking forward to talking to her today.
Yeah, we really want to encourage everybody to be part of the big picture. And so giving you tools to take that first step towards contributing to the industry as a whole is something that's a big focus. And this show is for you if you're interested.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
Joining us now is Cara Netto, founder of KLN Communication and features editor for the Healthcare Purchasing News. Cara, you've got a great article in Healthcare Purchasing News. We're excited to talk to you about it, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I am very honored to talk with you about the survey.
Healthcare Purchasing News has a tagline, clinical intelligence for the supply chain leadership. And I wanted to talk to you, maybe start the interview discussing the why behind Healthcare Purchasing News' decision to place an emphasis on sterile processing in their periodical.
It goes back quite a few years. HPN began covering the sterile processing space in late 1977 called Purchasing Administration, and it was the only magazine to cover CSSPD operations. Purchasing Administration went as Hospital Purchasing News, and they debuted the CS Monthly as a section because the editorial team really recognized the importance that the department played in healthcare. And it was actually the first carve-out section of the magazine. And if you take a look back at the magazine's archives, it appears that at that time, there was an increasing concern regarding surgical instrument cleaning. In the January 1992 issue, there was an article in a series on endoscopy. The same issue also dug into the CDC's recommendation for manual scope processing and FDA protocols. That issue also included an interview with Mary Margaret Reithart, and she was described as a CS veteran and consultant. She said that a new group was forming, the American Society for Testing Materials, the ASTM, and that they were testing disinfectants. What was also in that issue was the Association for the Advancement of Medical Instrumentation, AAMI, had just launched a new working group to develop testing protocols for reusable medical devices. So the new CS Monthly section at that time was really full of CS stories, as well as CS supporting advertisers, including HPN's support for the Isham Viewpoint column each month. To date, HPN, which is now Healthcare Purchasing News, is the only magazine to offer continuous coverage of sterile processing operations in the industry. We're going on 41 years. No one else can claim that.
That's excellent. The salary survey, I know, is a little bit more recent. It definitely doesn't go back 41 years, but I'm sure we would love to have that data. But maybe talk about the background of the survey, how it's implemented, and how many years you actually have been doing it.
So this is our 23rd year conducting the survey. The first survey took place in August of 1995. And it's great to be able to look back on that data because back then, the average salary for CS directors was about $41,000 a year. And the average annual salary for CS technicians was about $19,000. Today, all these years later, we still send out the annual survey to our opt-in sterile processing subscribers and compile the responses. And our typical response rate is between 18 and 25%, which is pretty good.
That is a great response rate. I know folks, when they get that in their inbox, the year after year information in this survey, they realize that it's that much more important to respond so that that data gets out there into the masses. I guess that works into our next question here. Can you talk a little bit about that importance of this particular discussion, the salary survey in the sterile processing space, and why HPN has decided to do this now every year?
So I have to say, this is my favorite article of the year because I always have so many sterile processing professionals wanting to comment on the results and the trends. This year, I actually ended up having to turn a few people away because I went way over my word count with the article. But I hated to miss out on their insights, so I invited them to provide commentary for upcoming articles instead. You know, the survey is really a great way to gauge trends in the profession, including salaries, certification, education. And it uses both the data and real-world insights from those individuals working in the profession every day. We also select a sterile processing department of the year and publish an article on that team, which is also a great way to highlight the latest trends in action. It also shows the growth of technology use within the sterile processing world, which requires training and education.
Cara, early on in the Beyond Clean podcast, we actually had Allison Sonstoli on from the Sanford Health System up in North Dakota, who was a previous winner of the Department of the Year award from HPN. So all along, even the podcast, you know, HPN has been there in the background. We know the great work that's been going on there, and we've talked about the awards, but we've always had on the radar now to dig into what these trends are that you mentioned that are coming out of the survey, because it is such an important aspect of the future of our industry. So if you would take a little time and kind of walk us through what you're seeing in the 18 survey.
It's so exciting each year to get that spreadsheet from Chris Russell, our publisher, and the rest of the team, and start digging into that data to see how it compares to the previous years. One of the things that we saw was a modest increase in the average annual salary for sterile processing professionals. It was up from $57,000 in 2017 to about $60,000 in 2018. And what's interesting is that we've received feedback from sterile processing professionals that this average salary seems rather high compared to what they're experiencing. So we did a little bit of digging into the data, and we found that one reason why this might be the case is that we have a rather high percentage of respondents in the upper level management categories. So we have nearly 40% of respondents this year with CSSPD director or manager positions. That could be one of the reasons why the average salary is somewhat higher than what folks are actually experiencing out there. One of the things that we noticed in this year's results was that the OR liaison and educator roles reported the biggest salary hikes, with 32% and 22% gains respectively. We did some digging on this as well to find out why it happened, and discovered that these respondents in these categories and these positions had higher education levels compared to those who took the survey in 2017. And that could be one of the reasons why we saw these significant leaps in pay. Speaking of education, as in past years, the higher level of education achieved, the higher the annual salary in the CSSBD profession, according to the survey results. So those with postgraduate degrees reported the highest salaries, an average of $88,190 annually. That's a sharp contrast with sterile processing professionals with only high school diplomas, who earned an average of about $51,000 annually. What we've seen is that as the CSSBD professional climbs the education ladder from high school to diploma to an associate's degree and next to a bachelor's degree, his or her salary increases approximately $10,000 annually, according to the survey results.
You know what's funny about that too, Kara? I'm going to quote Hank from the article himself. He says, it's no secret we have a compensation problem in our industry. As with all economic issues, however, there's no easy fix to bring compensation of CS professionals in line with the value that they provide the hospital. And we know many times the certification efforts at the state level to require certification, one of the biggest concerns is that requiring certification would increase the compensation for the CS professionals, and that would hit the budgets of the hospitals that are trying to tighten things. And what we've always touted on this show is that obviously there's greater value from higher educated technicians or certified technicians. I noticed, though, that it's not really related to the certification, those hikes, that it's actually related to what level of post-high school college they have had. It is really what results in the increased pay. So it's an important distinction in this debate to make, that requiring certification doesn't necessarily result in the hike. What we are seeing is that people with, you know, higher levels of education are getting into sterile processing, and that may be where the increases are resulting, which is a good thing.
So yes, that's an interesting point. What's interesting is that we also saw increases in CS professionals with bachelor's degrees and postgraduate degrees this year compared with last year.
Yeah, Kara, going back to the topic of the respondents, I know that's something, even through this podcast, our vision is to connect the unconnected out there in the industry, the folks all the way, you know, from the front lines through to the director level, and then, you know, anyone who has anything to do with sterile processing. But to this survey, as you noted, we actually need more respondents responding from the front lines, if you will, so we can get a better gauge even and we have in the past, of what the compensation reality is for those frontline technicians. So as a part of the plug for this episode, if you're listening out there in sterile processing world, when this survey comes out next year, complete it and tell your friends, we need more information from you.
Exactly. That would be wonderful. You know, it comes out every year. We do the survey in the beginning of the year. It gets sent out to the subscribers. So yes, please, if you get it, please respond, because it's wonderful to have this information. And we really would like to have a good representation across the entire career ladder for the sterile processing profession.
I know you said that you had to turn some of the professionals away that ended up commenting on their survey results, but can you talk a little bit about what that feedback was from the folks that you ended up quoting in the article?
I always get, like I said, such a great response from sterile processing professionals wanting to comment on the survey results. And really, you know, so many of the topics that I cover each year, I feel like it's such a passionate profession. So it was, you know, I was very disappointed that at one point I just had to say, okay, I've gone way over my word limit. I'm going to have to save some of this for future issues. But, you know, the folks that I did speak with, they really continued to voice the need for greater recognition and greater compensation. Sterile processing, it's such a vital function to patient care and safety. But from what I hear, the vast majority of healthcare leaders just don't understand its value. And therefore, they don't want to invest in its people, processes, or technology. And, you know, while the survey itself tells a data-driven story about the profession, the interviews that I conduct, they really provide real-world perspectives. So, for example, in this year's survey, nearly half of respondents reported feeling very secure in their positions. But when I spoke with those working in the field, a major reason why there's such high demand for sterile processing technicians is the extremely high turnover rates. Not for this article, but for a previous article I had done interviews for, I remember someone telling me the story that when a Home Depot opened up close to their hospital, nearly all of the technicians left to work there because the hourly pay rate was higher than what they were making from the hospital. It really makes you stop and think about compensation in this profession. In an effort to attract and retain staff members, I've heard about departments partnering with local colleges that offer CSSPD education and certification training. The students get the opportunity to work in the SPD while they are in school, and then they get placed once they graduate and achieve certification. But I was also told that a downside is that colleges use these CSSPD certification programs as a feeder for their nursing, respiratory therapy, and surgical assisting programs. So students on wait lists for these other programs will sign up for CSSPD training to open the door to get into a hospital. But once they are in there, they transition to another department. How do we make sterile processing a profession that young people want to enter and succeed in? I mean, we can't be blind to the fact that cash is king. Enthusiasm for the work alone isn't going to pay the bills.
I want to ask you another question just in looking at the results, and it's a graph that kicks it off, and it says salary by education and gender. And we see this disparity between male and female right up until the postgraduate degree, where there's a significant hike in for females, up 16,000 over males in the postgrad degree. Just seems like really odd. It's glared at me statistically. Do you have any insight on that one?
Yeah, that was very interesting. And I actually consulted with our publisher, Christine Russell, to get her perspective on it. She believes that it may be due in part to more directors of nursing assuming responsibility over sterile processing departments.
Excellent. All right. Well, there's a lot of good content in here. Just going to encourage, and I'm sure many of our listeners already subscribe to Healthcare Purchasing News. Definitely going to go and encourage them to dive into this. It's very thorough, and we're looking forward to continuing the discussion after a short break with Carinetto, founder of KLN Communications and features editor for Healthcare Purchasing News. We're back with Carinetto, founder of KLN Communications and features editor for Healthcare Purchasing News. All right, Kara, now we're going to look a little bit more broader. Wanted to talk to you about your profession And specifically, how and why did you begin writing in the CS or sterile processing space?
So I've been in healthcare communications for nearly 20 years, but I started my career on the other side of the editorial fence as a public relations consultant. So I first met the healthcare purchasing news team while I was working at Mullen Advertising, which is a Boston-based agency. And at the time, I served as a consultant to life science companies, mainly medical device manufacturers. After leaving Mullen, I spent a year working in life sciences for another Boston-based agency. And then I decided to launch my own public relations consultancy, which is how KLN Communications was born 12 years ago. Writing has always been my passion. So over the years, I've moved away from what many would call traditional public relations services, such as media pitching, so I can focus more on content development work for clients, including articles, white papers, case studies, marketing materials, social media content, etc. I've also broadened the scope of my client base to include not only medical device manufacturers, but also healthcare software solutions providers and industry associations. I've established a strong niche in the healthcare supply chain world, writing about topics including process automation and data standardization. It was in early 2013, healthcare purchasing news publisher Chris Russell asked if I would like to join the editorial team as a features editor covering sterile processing topics. I've always had such tremendous respect for Chris and the magazine and its staff members, so I was very honored to join them. You know, at the time, I really had no experience with the sterile processing world, but because I had knowledge around device manufacturing and supply chain processes, I was excited to learn about this important element of the device life cycle. Here I am 5 years later, and I love writing about the CSSPD space. The processes are so complex. The technologies to perform them are amazing, but what I've been most impressed by are the professionals who perform this function so critical to patient care and safety.
I have mentioned to you before when we've chatted on the phone that there are so few folks in the industry who are writing about sterile processing related topics on a consistent basis, or, you know, as you do often, give a platform for those in the industry to get their ideas out, even like you did with the salary survey. So I voiced my respect for you before, but I want to say it again. Thank you for what you do for us, because you really do give that voice in a way that, you know, maybe we can't exactly say it as professionally as you say it, but we know that needs to be said.
And I want to thank you and everyone else that I've spoken with in the sterile processing profession, because without those personal, real world insights, you know, the articles wouldn't be as relevant. I mean, we really need to have folks who are willing to talk about this and what happens in the sterile processing field. So I just want to thank you folks and everyone else who's been willing to be interviewed. And I just encourage everyone to, you know, continue to be willing to voice your thoughts on the industry.
As an amateur writer myself, I know one of the biggest challenges for folks, and there may be folks out there, you know, who have never written a professional article in their lives, but they have a lot of ideas in their head jumbling around saying, someone needs to say something about this. As someone who does this for a living, could you share a little bit about how you move from an idea to an article and put concrete structure into those ideas? How do you get from point A to a finished product?
So it's really a collaborative process with the HPN team. So towards the end of each year, we meet to discuss editorial content for the coming year. Then we do some brainstorming and go back and forth on ideas before we establish our editorial calendar. But the topics are never really set in stone. You know, many times I'll be assigned a topic with the idea that it will go in one direction. But when I'm conducting interviews, I gain new insights that shift the focus of the article. That's the real beauty of being able to gain the perspectives from so many different individuals throughout the healthcare industry, healthcare providers, manufacturers, consultants. You really get the full range of opinions and ideas. So for that reason, I typically conduct all of my interviews, either on the phone or by email, before I begin writing the article. I literally type up all of my notes, print them up, spread them across my desk, and with a pen, I make notes on themes that emerge, great comments that can be used as quotes, and commentary that might not be the right fit for my current article, but could be used in a future piece. It's from there that I draft the article. I read it, edit, read it again, edit it again until I'm satisfied with the content. And while I'm writing my articles, I look to the other members of the HPN team to recommend contacts to interview, products to feature, and angles to take. So it's really a lot of collaboration.
You know, you talk about your whole process there, but I'm sure initially it wasn't really well ironed out. And I'd love it if you could share with some of our listeners, because we're always encouraging them to get out there and have their voice. We had an excellent interview with Nestor Hernandez, and that was a big focus of that interview, was just empowering and encouraging all the experts in the industry out there to raise up and write and speak and engage. And so there may be some hesitation there because people are like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to get started. And everybody has to be in that place at some point. And so I wondered if there were some mistakes that young writers can make or that you made yourself that would just help people avoid some of those pitfalls and maintain some momentum with their confidence.
Oh, definitely. You know, I look back on my own career and when I started writing right after, even in college, right after college on various topics. And I look back on some of the things I did back then and I think, wow, it's good to read, you know, even go back to those earlier things that I wrote and look at what I'm writing now to see kind of what that progression was. You know, back in my agency days, I managed interns and younger individuals entering the profession. And I found that a lot of them made the same mistakes that I made. Plagiarism is a huge problem. And I know that sounds horrible, but it's not usually intentional. It's rather done out of an experience. So I can remember asking a young woman I was managing at Mullen Advertising to draft a press release. And when I took a look at it, I realized she had copied paragraphs out of previous releases that I had written for this client and just pasted them into her release. You know, while it's harder to develop original content, young writers really have to use their own thoughts and language. There are cases certainly where we need to use boilerplate language or specific wording for legal and regulatory reasons, particularly when writing about life sciences products. But beyond that, the writer really must use his or her creativity, because that's what writing is really all about. Another problem that I've seen, and I experienced myself early in my career, is the use of canned quotes. And this is something that I really struggled with for years. I can remember writing for one specific client when I was in my early 20s, and their head of marketing approached me during a trade show to tell me how much he hated the quotes that I wrote for him. It's actually quite funny because all these years later, I'm his go-to person when he needs medical device communication support. But back then, I was so afraid to go outside the box. You know, I started each quote that I wrote for him as, you know, we are greatly pleased to dot, dot, dot. And this client, he really forced me to go outside my comfort zone and think about what he would actually say on the specific topic at hand. I would say to a young writer that if you are tasked with writing a quote from an executive and are at a loss for what he or she would say, ask if you could hop on a call for 5 minutes or so with him or her and ask a few questions, take some notes, and write something based on what you've heard. I mean, that's really more of a MarCom public relations challenge, since in the editorial world, we try to accurately capture what an individual actually said when we quote them in an article. But even then, it can be challenging to effectively capture their personality in the words. I guess that brings me to another point. Young writers really need to be proactive. I can't tell you how many times I've had young professionals who were tasked with writing something come back to me and say they couldn't do it because they didn't have enough information, didn't understand the topic, or didn't know what direction to take. To be successful, you have to take initiative and get what you need to get the job done. Pick up the phone and call someone or shoot them an email with some questions. When I started my career, the internet was in its infancy, but today a writer can find whatever they need online. I realize that healthcare writing is challenging because there are an abundance of technical terms and acronyms. If you're struggling, just look them up online and or speak with someone to get some clarification. The other thing I would recommend is always keep a copy of the Associated Press style book on your desk. I always have mine close by. It may seem old school, but there's so many times during the course of a month where I pick that up and have to look up something like a state abbreviation or how to use a phrase a certain way or a technical term. I mean, it's always so great to have that right near me. And, you know, lastly, I'd say writing about healthcare topics and technologies is a constant learning process. But that's what makes it really exciting and such a fulfilling career.
Those are fantastic tips there, Karen. I think the only thing that I would add is if you want to become a better writer, become a better reader and read the folks that you respect in the industry. When you see an article come out and kind of touch you, you know, find more articles from that author, not necessarily, you know, style yourself after them, like your reference with the plagiarism. You don't want to become another one of those. You want to find your voice, like Nestor was talking about in our previous episode. But the more that you read and the more insight you see how folks tie in those quotes like you referenced and how they engage with particular ideas, that gives you more and more firepower and perspective when you sit down to write your own. So you're not trying to reinvent the entire wheel here. It is in that same zone of what is the typical writing style for this industry in sterile processing, and then how would you replicate it on your own? To that point, a question now in the social media age is always for writers to say, how do I create a viral article, or how do I create viral content in particular in the sterile processing space? How would you respond to that question?
So Chris and I had a call on this topic last week. Chris is the healthcare purchasing news publisher. And we both agreed that what makes a CS article viral are truth and disclosure. I mean, everyone wants to speak with a reporter and be featured in an article when everything is going great with their organization. But the stories that really shine are those where someone speaks freely about the challenges they are facing and what they are doing to address them. That's what I love about most of the sterile processing professionals who I encounter. They're not afraid to speak the truth. Topics such as addressing friction between sterile processing and OR teams, or how a CSSBD turned around a dysfunctional department. Those are the stories that everyone loves because they are real.
So closing out here, Kara, can you talk a little bit about the impact that social and professional networking has on the quality and scope of your articles?
So when I first began writing about sterile processing, I had to rely on my fellow HPN editorial team members to provide sources, and I still look to them for that. But over the years, networking has significantly expanded my contact list. I have to say that LinkedIn has been a tremendous resource for networking, both for securing new clients for my healthcare writing business and for identifying new sources for my HPN articles. The LinkedIn Sterile Processing Department Professionals Group is my go-to resource when I'm looking for individuals to provide commentary for articles. When I post an article topic in that group and a request for interviews, I typically get a great response. As I mentioned previously, for the salary survey article, I actually had to turn some people away in that group who wanted to speak on the topic because I simply ran out of room in the article. It's really a great way to connect with new people, keep in touch with existing contacts, and stay up to date on news and trends.
Well, Kara, I'll tell you what, this has been an incredibly insightful interview, and I know you're on the other side being the interviewee, but we really appreciate you coming on. And again, very insightful with the article. Love to see the trending that you've captured over the last 20 plus years in salaries. But then also, one of the things that we really hope to do with this show is inspire more and more people to write, to get involved. And even if it just starts by participating in the salary survey itself, but you shared some really good tips for people that may have the initiative and the desire to contribute to the profession beyond just their daily work. And I can't thank you enough for being willing to share those thoughts and to be candid with your insights.
Well, I'm so honored to have been invited to be on the show, and I really do appreciate it. And, you know, if there's folks who are interested in taking part in an article for Healthcare Purchasing News, or like you said, you know, we get requests from folks wanting to submit articles. You know, I think the best place to start is, like you said, read, you know, take a look at what's being written out there already. Read through the magazine for the content, for the style. And, you know, we really do encourage people to participate in whatever way. If you want to submit an article, participate in the survey, if you want to be interviewed for an article, we really need those real-world perspectives from sterile processing professionals. And it's really those perspectives that make these articles shine. So I do encourage folks to participate.
That was Kara Netto, founder of KLN Communication and features editor for Healthcare Purchasing News. I think the things that I really took away from that interview with Kara, especially specific to the annual survey in Healthcare Purchasing News, is number one, there's a gigantic shift towards education in the industry. And it's not just related to certification. It's just secondary education across the board, especially when she was talking about the OR liaisons and the educators. We love to see increased communication with the end user internally, the operating room. And we love to see increasing the knowledge base of the frontline technicians and the staff. And those educators can also be a liaison of sorts to the OR as well. So that's a good shift that I think helps support required certification and getting that across the board at states all across the country. And then I really did find the initial slide that's in this article showing the salaries of men and women in the profession, and then this hike in anybody who has a graduate level degree. So, Hank, very curious. I've got my own theories on why that shift may occur, but at the end of the day, it's funny how much data they collect, and I think it tells us a lot about the future of the industry.
Yeah, isn't it funny, Justin, that the concept of data came up again in this interview, as it almost always does in our episodes. Now, typically we're talking about processing data, quality improvement data, but here we're just talking about compensation information on the front lines of this profession. So yeah, great interview, really highlighting those trends that we're seeing out there. My biggest takeaway was the fact that we need more respondents to these types of surveys so that the data can get more and more granular in terms of states and regions or genders or education backgrounds, whatever it is, and more voices that stand up and say, this is what we're getting paid and this is why, the better that this kind of information will be for the industry.
We talk all the time about education as well as the data analytics, and that's what we're really saying is we need industry educators, not just department educators, but people who will get involved and produce content and help raise the awareness of the challenges that face sterile processing every day, and we want others to get involved, and so there you go. It's exactly what needs to happen, and I think Kara definitely shared some great tips for that. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the success of the show. And if you do have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.